zero oral argument, original action, Mary E. Panzer versus James E. Doyle. And the lineup that I have is 13 minutes for Gordon Baldwin, 12 minutes for Stephen Morgan, 30 minutes for John S. Green, and 5 minutes for Attorney Baldwin in rebuttal. Counsel, you may proceed.
Chief Justice, may it please the Court, I am Gordon Baldwin and represent Mary Panzer and John Gard. We do not challenge the 1998 Compact revisions, and in this respect we differ from the argument presented by our learned colleagues from Dairyland. We do contest the validity of the 2003 amendments unveiled first by the governor on February 19th, unveiling an unprecedented and unanticipated revision of Indian gaming compacts. Although described as an amendment, the 2003 version worked sea changes by adopting new and unanticipated change, making new Wisconsin public policy. The 2003 compact was further amended on April 4th, a couple of days after we filed our first petition, and on May 30th, a day or so after our case was remanded from federal district court. We faced a moving target and amended our petition accordingly. But the point is that the 2003 compact makes changes so dramatic that it can only realistically be viewed as a new arrangement. By making new public policy, the governor effectively changed the rules and the standards of state Indian gaming arrangements. It makes structural and basic policy changes. Now, we don't claim a neat box into which executive, legislative, or judicial functions can be placed indelibly. But we do claim that the 2003 compacts impinged by going too far into legislative prerogatives unanticipated and unjustified by 14.035.
If I might interrupt for a moment first. I look at 14.035. I see very broad powers given to the governor, and I see no limitations on those powers. Why were the 2003 amendments violative of that provision?
You're quite correct. Indeed, 14.035 may have been flawed from the beginning, as District Attorney McCann's brief points out, but we have to live with it. But the changes are so dramatic that 14.035 is an insufficient foundation. Number one, no one without the tribe's consent can change the terms. The compact, by its terms, I think it's Article 30, prevails over any subsequent change in Wisconsin law or even in the Wisconsin Constitution. Yes, the parties can seek changes, can ask for changes, and negotiate in good faith. There's a timetable, a 5-year, 20-year, whatever. In fact, I think you could ask for changes the day after. But there's no obligation in the compact to make changes, to accept amendments, or to allow any kind of termination.
But what is it that limits the governor's power? You know, when I look at 14.035, like I said, it's very broad. There's no limitation. So what is it that you claim limits his power?
It's a separation of powers argument, Justice Crooks. It makes such a structural change in policy that even the legislature could not authorize the governor to revise the constitutional structure of Wisconsin. And this is essentially a constitutional revision, for example.
Well, let me just ask the question in a different way. I understand your briefs. You are not attacking the constitutionality of 14.035. You have said you've got to live with it, right?
On its face, we do not contest it. As applied, we do.
Okay. My second question to you is this. you attack various provisions. You don't attack the governor's authority to enter into a compact. You don't attack his authority to renew or amend a contract. You attack his authority to include in that contract certain provisions.
We attack his power to do what he did in 2003.
But not the entire contract, the compact. You're not attacking the whole thing.
I think one has to look at it as a whole. The indefinite provision, for example, is fundamental.
Well,
the extension
of gains
is fundamental.
Just a question. You're attacking the governor's powers. Your brief says you're not taking a position as to whether the legislature could have executed the exact same contract.
We take no position on that,
Your
Honor.
Take no position on that. So, from my understanding is, had this been a gubernatorial and legislative contract, you wouldn't be here.
Somebody else might be here, but
they might be, but you wouldn't, and your clients would not.
That is
so
correct.
What you're really fighting is not what you call perpetual, although we can debate that. You're not fighting that. You're saying the governor can't do it. Legislature might, legislature and governor might, but not the governor, right?
This is a gubernatorial decision making public policy of the type which the legislature should make.
Counsel, how can the governor, together with the legislature, do this? On page 12 of your brief, you assert, by adding games that are expressly prohibited by the 1993 Constitutional Amendment to Article 4, Section 24, the governor rejects the balance of power. If the games that were added by this amendment of 2003 are games that are expressly prohibited in the 1993 constitutional amendment to Article 4, Section 24, how can anyone do it? I don't care if it's the governor and the legislature and everyone here voting for it if it's unconstitutional.
Well, we're trying
to say by adding games that are expressly prohibited by the 1993 constitutional amendment. So if you could help me with that, please.
I was trying to explain that to Mr. Green some months ago. We do not...
Maybe you'll be more successful than us.
Perhaps not. We're trying to take a middle position.
That's what I've thought.
I'm trying not to bind the legislature or my clients to any particular position. But the 1993 amendments, while forbidding roulette, craps, and poker in the state lottery, express a policy of dubious policy, that the legislature is dubious, then the people are dubious about these games. The legislature is not attempting to make these games part of the state lottery. But if the legislature and the governor want to make an Indian compact which would include these games, we take no position on whether the legislature has that power. We are definitely taking a position that the governor alone and unilaterally cannot expand the scope of gaming beyond that approved in the 1998 compacts. That to do so goes over what is otherwise a gray area between the legislative prerogative, or into the legislative prerogative, and outside the executive's prerogatives.
Are you leaving the implication that the legislature could have granted some of these games to non-Indians?
I think that is unlikely to be approved either by the legislature, perhaps by the legislature. But I think I would take the position, no, the legislature can't, that the Indian gaming is a separate sphere, as the governor has said, and as the briefs of the Indian tribes suggest. It is a separate sphere, but it is not so separate that the authority of the governor under the law of Wisconsin is enhanced. The federal statutes do not tell us who can make a compact. That is a matter of Wisconsin and pure Wisconsin law. And we are simply arguing that the governor of Wisconsin lacks authority to make a compact of virtually indefinite, perpetual duration, which would expand the scope of gaming beyond any of the policies embraced by the 1998 compacts, which we do not contest.
Could I ask, how do I know when the governor has violated separation of powers? What's the test?
Well, I'm not so sure there's a test. There's a standard. And the standard, it seems to me, is to ask, is the governor making new public policy outside an area where he has previously made public policy? Is it so innovative as to go over this gray line between executive power and legislative power? There may be some overlaps, but there's no overlap in a case like this, where the governor has made a compact that cannot be terminated, has added games that Wisconsin public policy forbids under some circumstances, and indeed removes the matter of Indian gaming from public debate. I mean, if the governor is correct, it will never be possible to redebate the question of should there be Indian casino gaming, or secondly, should they be extended. Furthermore, notice that the governor in the 2003 compact changed the gubernatorial position. The original compact said that you could have any Indian games that were allowed within 75 miles of the Wisconsin border. That was removed. Why, I don't know. The original compact appropriated money for the University of Wisconsin from the revenues. It was removed. I don't know. What are the risks if we don't check gubernatorial power now?
Counsel, what you're saying, so that, and I'm going to ask this question, but perhaps it's begging the answer, and that is, so if the compacts are valid, what you're saying is that if the legislature, the governor, or the people decided tomorrow that they want to eliminate these gaming compacts, they couldn't do it. Is that...
Under the compact as it is written, that is absolutely true. The compact term, Section 30, trumps any subsequent state law and the Constitution. Now, indeed, whether even
the prior contract.
Let him answer this question first.
Well, it's in the one that the governor negotiated in 2003.
What about 98?
In the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
No change there.
That's why we have to view the 2003 compact as really a new enterprise, a new document that is so dramatically different that you can't simply dress it up and legitimize it by saying it's a merely renewal. It's heavenly days. It's more than a renewal. It's a dramatic and new change in Wisconsin public policy, and that is the job of the legislature.
Don't you run the risk in making that argument that this is this amendment is such a sea change and so substantial that it is a brand new document? I thought that you needed to rely on, in part, the relation back to the original 1992 and then the subsequent 1998 amendments to as a foundation of your argument to get around the 1993 constitutional amendment. That you don't need it. I mean, I'm just wondering, it seems like you might be at odds.
We're making a pragmatic argument. Maybe we could have challenged the 92 as Dairyland does, or the 98 as Dairyland does, but on February 19th, the governor unveiled something that was brand new, and it triggered the concern. It may have been lingering long concern, but triggering the concern of my clients, who asked us to bring this suit. And we tried to get here as quickly as we could, but it was delayed for reasons that the record shows.
So, counsel, the Constitution expressly prohibits, under the 1993 amendment, you're talking about these games that were extended out, the roulette, things of that nature. I just want to call your attention. I was looking at the
the Lombo case, and the conclusion, this is on page 9, it says that this is the, I conclude that the state is required to negotiate with the plaintiffs over the inclusion in a tribal-state compact of any activity that includes the elements of prize, chance, and consideration, and, this is the language, and that is not prohibited expressly by the Wisconsin Constitution or state law. Now, I take it that's part of your argument, that you were saying that even there in Lac de Flambeau, if it's, and that was in 91, so this amendment was in 93.
I think the terms of the 1993 constitutional amendment and the way it was presented to the voters requires us to review, rethink the Lac de Flambeau decision. It may be the law of Wisconsin, but I think it's been changed. I see my time has expired, and I'd like to.
I have a couple of questions.
Fire away.
One, do your clients accept District Attorney McCann's argument that the contract is invalid because it gives the state money?
That's a very interesting argument. I have seen no authority in other states that suggested it. And one of the reasons that I do not adopt that argument is it does present a federal question under IGRA. And quite frankly, we've been trying to stay out of federal court. We've gone to some effort to stay out of federal court to try to present an issue of pure Wisconsin law.
And you stipulate that all requirements of the federal law have been met.
Absolutely. And the letter from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, I think it was late April, it's in our appendix, points out that under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, the Bureau of Indian Affairs can only trump a compact that, one, violates IGRA itself, or two, violates some other federal law, or three, violates a federal trust obligation toward other Indian tribes. And the original February compact, for example, gave the Potawatomi protection against other Indian casinos within a certain number of miles, and that probably would have violated IGRA. But IGRA is a floor and does not touch upon which state authority will allow the or make the compact. And secondly, that the scope of gaming continues to be a part of state law. And it's our position that the scope of gaming embraced in the 2003 compact goes far, far beyond the authority of the governor to define.
I want to go back to Justice Crooks's question to you, which was about the broad words of 14.035, which you're not attacking. You are, however, your position is, as I hear it, that whatever Governor Thompson did in 93 and 98 is what is intended by 14.035, and that dramatic changes, and we can dispute what's dramatic, dramatic changes in 2003 are beyond the governor's power. Now, what is it in 14.035 or anything else that limits the governor's powers to those that were exercised by Governor Thompson?
Well, I don't want to attack or even defend whatever Governor Thompson did. In fact, I think it was possibly attackable as of the time. But that's water over the dam. And what's past is past, and there's not much we or this court can do about actions prior to 1998 as we see the case. 14.035 was drafted immediately after the Carbazon decision. The issue of state Indian gaming relationships was an uncharted field. Nobody anticipated the kinds of problems that arise today. And in fact, if you look at the 1992 compact.
The legislature could always amend 14.035.
Indeed, they have tried. The governor
tried.
Vetoes.
Yeah. That's right. And is the court a place to override a governor's veto, or is it the legislature? When you say there's no opportunity for the public to respond, or the legislature to respond, there is an opportunity with new legislation. But they don't have the votes is another issue, but that's a political issue.
New legislation cannot overturn what the governor has done if the 2003 compact is valid. 14.035 could be revised tomorrow, but unless the governor is checked, a change in 14.035 will have no effect on the 2003 compact unless this court says the governor went too far.
Or unless there are particular provisions in the contract that that would allow it. But we'll deal with that with Mr. Morgan.
Could I ask you, Professor Baldwin, could one look to the law of executive agreements in the national level as a source of any kind of guidance?
Well, we know, I guess, it's the potato case suggests that executive agreements cannot overturn an existing state law. And, of course, a treaty might overturn a state law, but or a federal law even, but a subsequent act of the legislature can trump a treaty, and certainly the Congress can trump executive agreements. It has been done from time to time. The scope of presidential power, of course, is enlightened by a large number of cases. And, of course, we cite the steel seizure case as an example of a president occupying a legislative role and being checked by the courts. And I think there's an analogy here. The governor interprets 14035 as a blank check. And if he's correct, the governor next year could agree on a compact change amendment to abolish church bingo because it competes with Indian gaming. I don't think he's going to do that, but my point is that a gubernatorial decision in compact negotiations has no check, ever, forever, unless this court rules that the governor can go too far. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baldwin. Stephen L. Morgan, also representing Panzer and Guard. Mr. Morgan.
May it please the court. I'm going to address two issues, the unlawful appropriations issue and the sovereign immunity issue.
Counsel, before you do that, I want to know if it's your position also that the 2003 amendments really are a brand new contract.
The 2003 amendments are in fact a brand new contract because they went beyond what was grandfathered by the passage of the 1993 amendment. What had been in place was the 91-92 compacts. Those games were grandfathered in.
Is the consequence of your argument then that if this is a brand new contract, that things like blackjack and slot machine, which were specifically prohibited under sub C, 6C of Article 4, Section 24, will no longer be available constitutionally, period?
No, I would think that those are part of what was grandfathered. The games survive. The compact may be changed, may have been changed so dramatically that the 2003 is in effect a new compact. But the games were grandfathered in, and certainly the tribes have quite a bit at stake as to what they've invested.
Absent a continuation of the compacts from 92 to 98, where do you find authority that blackjack and slot machines, which are specifically referred to as being prohibited games, are grandfathered in?
There's no language that says they were grandfathered in. I'm taking that position.
Where's the authority for that position?
I assume it would be under something almost of common law contract reliance by the tribes. But as to the other games, there could be no reliance.
You're saying at least for the duration of the contracts,
Absolutely.
But your position is that those contracts no longer exist. This is a brand new contract.
Well, I think the 1998 compact continues on, and I think there's some language as well in the 2003 compact that continue them on if there is something that causes them to be terminated for other reasons.
The language is that if there is a portion that is determined in this new compact, that is Section 33 sub A, in the event that, let's say, the duration amendment is disapproved, then you will revert back to the contract provisions of 1998. I think that's what you're referring to.
And I think that those will be running, at least in this matter that we have before the court, the Potawatomi compact. I think that runs until June of 04. That's my memory. So it still is in effect for another 4 or 5 months. Could be.
Now, is your position that the entire contract falls, the entire compact falls, or just these provisions that you're attacking? Because there is a severability clause.
There indeed is a severability clause, but under the terms of these compacts with the amount of money involved for, I would assume it was a quid pro quo for the games that were allowed. There would have to be a renegotiation of the monies. There would have to be a renegotiation of the games and a variety of other things, including the perpetuity. Why else would you pay this amount of money if you were going to have to renegotiate every few years just for the blackjack and the other formerly permitted games?
So your answer is the entire compact falls.
I think it does at this point, yes, because the policies that were brought into the new compact were so pervasive as to, they overwhelmed what had been in the old compact.
Does the state give back the money?
The state
That's
hasn't...
provision in the contract.
Actually, I don't believe that the state has accepted any monies under the 2003 compact until June of 04.
So it can't take the money.
It wouldn't be able to take that money then. And there would have to be a new negotiation for a new compact.
And if the state already took $6.5 to $7 million, then it would have to be repaid.
I believe that's under the 1998 compact. And that the big dollars come in, which led to my appropriations point, which was in June of 04 and June of 05, a total of $77.8 million is going to be paid by the tribes, which, under the terms of the compact, when or if the state moves and changes the constitution or otherwise permits other competition to come in, then the money has to be paid back. Under that circumstance, what the governor has created here is a monopoly, and I believe I heard, although I was upstairs and it was hard to hear sometimes, I believe I heard that the Attorney General has agreed that, in fact, this provision did create, this compact has created a monopoly. And if that is the case, then the public never had one chance to address a monopoly for a certain group of people. And that's the policy issue. That comes through as a separation of powers, and what comes through as an appropriation violation is that if the state chooses 2, 3, 4, 6 years from now to amend the Constitution to allow for competition in some form or another, then it has to pay back the $77.8 million. The governor required the legislature to pay it back at a future date. That's an appropriation, and that's impermissible. That goes through the border of the executive versus the legislative branch.
Counselor, looking at the 2003 compacts, are all of the provisions, except the renewal provisions, contained within the 2003 compact, or were some deleted? And what I'm focusing on is the 2003 contract, an expansion of what was in the 1992 compacts, or is it something totally different?
It is impossible to read some days because it refers you back to, there are so many amendments here it's hard to follow, and they did not rewrite it. So that you have to go backwards in time to the 98 compact, then you have to go back to the 92 compact. And then sometimes you're in the February version of the 2003, the May version of 2003, and I think there was another one in between there. And it is hard to follow. I think the answer is that there is one document in that sense, because all they're doing is technically trying to amend the 1991 or 1992 compact. That's what they tried to do.
Well, they're building on what was there before, but they haven't given up anything that was in the earlier compact?
Unless they amended it, no, they would not have given it up.
Okay.
I don't think.
Okay, thank you.
I don't get that then, it's a brand new, the 2003 amendments equal a brand new contract.
I guess we're not talking about the difference of four corners of a piece of paper. What we're talking about is, did it overwhelm what was there before? The amounts of money, the perpetuity, the scope of gaming took over. It was so pervasive that it created by itself a new provision. That's our position in that.
Mr. Morgan, what about the argument that when the legislature passed the budget bill, which included dependence on the sums to be paid by the tribes, that it in effect ratified the new compacts? How do you respond to that argument?
Well, I don't think that the legislature can ratify the compacts by addressing the issues that are in front of it. It is simply not, it is not a party to a legal contract where we normally would see ratification by one party or another. Instead, the legislature had to address what the law was at that time. While it's contesting that, and while it recognizes that if this court does stop the payments coming in, it's going to have to go back and address them.
Well, so I understand your position. Your position is the legislature could have done all of this. It's just that the governor can't do it alone. So if you have the legislature taking some position that would indicate acknowledgement and no dispute with the contract, it seems to me that that can be viewed as the legislature acting in conjunction with the governor. There's nothing in any of these laws that say how the legislature can do it.
At the risk of perhaps being in contrast with Mr. Baldwin, I would say that the legislature here did not have an opportunity to address any of the issues. Had they had that opportunity, there probably would have been a different result. But in the context of things, could the legislature get involved? And yes, it's possible they could. But they certainly did not. And in this case, the governor had all the power.
Well, that's an issue as to whether they did by including it in the budget and in effect using that money.
In the budget they did. It hasn't been used yet.
No, but that's an indication.
Certainly.
And I want to get back to the governor's powers. Governor has broad powers under a variety of statutes to contract on behalf of the state. For services and goods. Why is that any different than 14.035?
In a sense, it's not. But the governor has no powers under any of the other contracting provisions to go beyond Article 4, Section 24, or to go beyond any other constitutional provision. And that's what's wrong in this case, is the incursion into the legislative process.
Well, then you'd have to say that the legislature can't violate the Constitution either, and you're not willing to take that position. Your clients are not willing to take that position. Your clients have preserved for themselves, in your brief, the power for the legislature to do exactly what the governor did. Their only objection, as I read your brief, and as Professor Baldwin indicated, you're taking a middle position. You know what happens to a person who takes the middle position? They get hit from both sides.
Sure.
And that's what you're doing.
But here, in fairness to the legislature, they had no, they took no action in regards to the compact except to bring this action in court. Had they taken votes, had they done something on it, then I think the two sides could be shooting at us. But instead, the legislature, under 14.035, I believe, recognized what the governor had done and that they had given that the governor that authority for these compacts.
But you would agree that if these new games that were added in the 2003 amendments are uncompactable under IGRA, then neither the legislature nor the governor can give them away in a compact.
I was with you until uncompactable under IGRA. I think they theoretically are compactable under IGRA. They are not compactable in the state of Wisconsin.
What's the
because of Article 4, Section 24.
Right. Because state law defines what's compactable.
Correct.
So if we conclude that this exceeds the scope of gambling because of the constitutional amendment in 1993, then you'd have to concede that neither the legislature nor the governor can give it away in a compact.
I would have to concede that, yes.
But dear clients, that's part of the brief.
The clients have, as legislature, various powers to proceed in a different manner if they have that power to proceed. And at this point, they don't have it. They cannot take action. 14.035 hasn't been overturned, nor have they been able, nor have they tried to take an action concerning a change in gambling and in the Constitution. Those are issues of policy that would be left for a future day. But at this point, the legislature is certainly waiting for what happens with what the governor has done.
Chief, by me. Just for clarification then, on page 12 of the brief, your brief, it says, petitioners argue that the governor alone cannot extend to Indian tribes authority to sponsor games listed in the 1993 amendment to the Wisconsin Constitution. Your response to Justice Sykes seems, I need clarification on that. Is it your argument that indeed the governor and the legislature together cannot do what the governor did, or the governor, or they can as long as they do it together? What is it? This causes me confusion when you say they argue the governor alone cannot extend the Indian tribe authority to sponsor games listed.
The first half, the governor alone cannot do that, is absolutely our position. There's no question about it. If the governor is going to cede authority or power to the legislature, then once that occurs, if that occurred, the legislature could take other actions and then together with the legislative powers to make changes to laws, perhaps they could make some changes here.
Even though it may or may not affect the constitutional question? I mean, they can't make changes if it's going to be in violation of the games that were expressly prohibited by the constitutional amendment.
I agree, but the legislature is the place you would start to make, if you needed to, a constitutional change.
Could I ask, do the February 2003 amendments expand the number of sites that the Potawatomi can have as casinos?
Frankly, I forget right now. There was either in... either in this, for this tribe, or in some of the others, and I've looked at the others, I can't answer that. But in the past, there was supposed to be some reservations for other sites, that they would address that either in the 91s or 98 compacts. I frankly don't recall right now.
Well, let me ask hypothetical. If, for just hypothetically, if the number of allowable sites were increased from two to six, would that be an unlawful expansion, in your view? view, a violation of the powers under 14.035?
Yes, and I think it would be, because if there, again, I go back to the word grandfathered in, if the 92 contemplated that, but in your example it does not, then it is an expansion to other places. I don't see how it comports or fits with the 1993 amendment saying there shall be no gambling, except for those that were permitted, the lottery and so forth. I did not address sovereign immunity. It was a short issue, but thank you.
Maybe Mr. Baldwin will address it in rebuttal. Mr. Green, Assistant Attorney General, representing Governor Doyle and Secretary Murata.
Thank you, Your Honor. And thankfully, my colleague, Mr. Hornstra, has not abandoned me. He's still at the council table. The question before the court in this case is whether Governor Doyle exceeded his authority last year by agreeing to several disputed terms in the 2003 amendments to the Pottawatomie Compact. He clearly did not. He acted pursuant to the express authority the legislature itself granted his office 14 years ago when it enacted 14.035. That statute plainly and clearly assigns responsibility and authority to the governor to negotiate and enter gaming compacts with tribes on behalf of the state. Governor Thompson was the first governor to exercise that authority in 91 and 92 and 98 and 99. Among other things, on behalf of the state, he selected which specific games the state was willing to agree to within the games permitted under IGRA. He also agreed to a duration provision with the tribes. And absent affirmative termination by one side, those compacts would extend indefinitely. Governor Doyle exercised precisely the same authority. He agreed on specific games within the framework of IGRA, and he agreed on a duration provision. Petitioner's objection goes to the substance of what Governor Doyle agreed to, not to the type of power exercised. A fundamental problem with their case is there is no distinction between the power exercised by Governor Thompson previously and Governor Doyle last year. They differ only in the specific terms.
Mr. Green, is there no restriction whatsoever on the powers of the governor based on 14035? Does 14035 mean the governor can do whatever he wants, whenever he or she wants to do it, in regard to Indian gambling?
The legislature decided that it would allow the governor to negotiate compacts in the state's best interest under IGRA. So to the full extent allowed by IGRA, the governor has authority. Now, the governor cannot violate an express constitutional provision or other state law provision directing him, but he has broad latitude to negotiate the best deal he believes is possible for the state. One thing that I would point out here is Professor Baldwin suggested that this was a sea change and totally unexpected, these provisions, but that's not really accurate. Even before the legislature enacted 14.035, our neighbor to the west, Minnesota, had already entered compacts that have an indefinite duration. They're one of the six other states that have those. The legislature was fully aware of that at the time, so they knew that was a possibility. Subsequently, when at least five other states went the same route and had compacts that last indefinitely, the legislature never saw fit to amend 14.035 and express its displeasure with that possibility.
Counsel, I just want to follow up on Justice Crook's question. In plain language, if the compacts are violent, which I assume you're arguing obviously that they are, in Wisconsin next week or a year from now decided it wanted to eliminate gambling, Indian gambling altogether, could it do it?
if there was a prohibition enacted across the board, all types of class 3.
Could Wisconsin, could we eliminate gambling in this state if these compacts are valid?
I think there's a good argument. It's an issue that, as far as I know, has never arisen. That is a state going from civil regulatory to criminal prohibitory. So I don't think there's any precedent on that point. I think it would be a hotly contested issue, obviously. But it may be possible that if the state reverted to totally prohibitory, that the compacts would no longer continue.
Well, your answer would be yes. So the legislature and the governor could enact legislation that would prohibit gambling.
That's certainly the first step towards getting the issue resolved, which points out the lack of ripeness of the claim on duration, because at the present time, there is no conflict between any expressed policy of the legislature and the compacts. It may be that down the road, some future legislature might enact a law, as you suggest, or in some other way.
I'm just listening for the answer. I didn't suggest anything. I'm waiting for you to suggest.
I'm taking on your hypothetical. What if the state reverted to a criminal prohibitory language? Then there would be a right claim. Then we have a conflict. The state of Wisconsin is trying to go this direction, and the compact goes this direction. That's when the claim would be right. It's not right now because this legislature and these petitioners are not suffering any injury, and we have no actual conflict at the moment with the compacts. In fact, they've agreed that compacts can bind future legislatures. And we know that they agreed that they can do so at least up to 15 years. One of the fundamental problems with petitioners' claim is that they give no guidance to this court as to how to fashion a specific constitutional rule. In response to the question asked earlier, Professor Baldwin, I believe, said, the governor goes too far when he's excessively innovative. That's hardly a clear constitutional standard. And this court itself has held in prior cases that it's exceedingly important, particularly in resolving separation of powers disputes, drawing lines of power between one branch and another, that we have a definite line that the decision makers, the legislature, the governor, and other actors in the state constitutional system can understand and can conform their behavior to. If the test is you have broad power to negotiate a contract, but don't be too innovative because then you're intruding on the legislative province, I think that is an utterly unworkable and unsatisfactory rule. It also points out the fact that even though we're here ostensibly on separation of powers, the petitioners have not cited a single case from this court or any other court in Wisconsin that addresses the principle that they're forwarding here. We have no case citation whatsoever addressing this idea that the governor goes too far when he's too innovative and he changes things too much.
Could I ask you, Mr. Green, could the governor have negotiated the sports betting, professional sports teams in the compact?
If a new gaming activity that's proposed complies with IGRA, then yes, it's within the governor's power, because that's what the legislature expressly said in 14.035.
But isn't your argument kind of circular, Counselor, because IGRA will authorize only the gaming permitted by the state? IGRA doesn't operate and say these games are allowed, those games are prohibited. It relies on state law to determine what is permissible in the state, correct?
IGRA looks to state law, correct.
Right. So there's more than IGRA at state. We have to go back and determine what our own law says about this and what we can do as a state within our own boundaries first before we can apply IGRA, correct?
Correct, but we don't have to do that in this case.
Why not?
Because we have an agreement among the parties that the new games and the duration provision comply with IGRA.
Well, we still have a little constitution that might just bother this court a little bit.
Well, petitioners can't have it both ways. They can't say that the games violate state law when comply with IGRA.
That's a legal conclusion, though, Counsel. We're not bound by your stipulation on that.
The very basis for the petitioners resisting federal court jurisdiction and seeking the remand to this court was that they disclaimed that this case is about any IGRA issues. That was the express basis, and they stipulated to that. As we've argued, this court lacks jurisdiction to determine the federal questions, the scope of gaming questions.
Well, that issue cannot be litigated in federal court because of an 11th Amendment bar under the Seminole case, isn't that right? So if it's not litigated or capable of being litigated in federal court because of the 11th Amendment, and you're saying we don't have any jurisdiction to consider it because it's a federal question that we can't touch, then it's unreviewable. That can't be the law.
That is not the law. In fact, the Artichoke Joe case from the Ninth Circuit is exactly such a case. The proper way to seek review of that determination in the question of what is the allowable scope of gaming under IGRA is to challenge the Secretary's approval of a compact. That's what the private parties did in the Artichoke Joe case, which the Ninth Circuit has now decided on appeal. So there is a remedy there in the federal court system.
So a state court has no say whatsoever in the interpretation of the scope of allowable gambling under state law?
The state court certainly can interpret the state's gambling laws, statutory and constitutional. The effect that those laws have on Indian gaming is a matter of federal law, because Congress set the rules and set exclusive remedies to adjudicate those disputes.
So if we were to issue an opinion in the earlier case or this case, which says that the state of Wisconsin prohibits the forms of gambling that were added in the 2003 amendments, and those are therefore criminal in the state of Wisconsin, that's as far as we can go, and how would that affect any subsequent federal litigation?
This court certainly can interpret our laws and determine what the scope of those laws is and what they mean.
So we can say our laws are criminal prohibitory.
I think the criminal prohibitory part, that's the federal law determination under IGRA.
We can say that Wisconsin criminalizes these forms of gambling and prohibits them unequivocally by virtue of Article 4, Section 24,
certainly,
which basically says that which is not expressly permitted herein is expressly prohibited.
Right. This court can certainly interpret the constitutional amendment and set forth what it means in the state of Wisconsin. But let me point out something that's important to keep in mind. State laws, in this context, govern state actors and state citizens. As a general rule, the state's gambling laws do not apply on reservations.
Public Law 280 says that they do if they are criminal prohibitory.
Correct. But we do not have a criminal prohibitory scheme. We have a system, as Judge Crabb concluded, where we allow Class 3 games.
That begs the question. That's why we're here. And we're not bound by Judge Crabb's conclusion as a matter of law, but certainly not after the 1993 amendments, which seriously changed the legal landscape. Correct? We're not forever bound by the decision of a federal district court that our law is civil regulatory.
No, but we are bound by the terms of the compacts in the intent of the parties.
As a matter of the impairment of contract clause of the federal and state constitution, but not for any other reason.
Counsel, let me chime in then, because I asked opposing counsel this question in the Lacombe case. This is in 91, 770 Federal Supplement 480, which you cited. Judge we're talking about said, I conclude that the state is required to negotiate with plaintiffs over the inclusion in a tribal state compact of any activity that includes the elements of prize, chance, and consideration, and that is not prohibited expressly by the Wisconsin Constitution. What does that mean then, in relation to your discussion?
That analysis would apply if we were starting from scratch with new compacts.
Well, that's what you're... So you're saying, if they can't buy the grandfather clause argument, this is what the opposing counsel is saying, that some of these games are grandfathered in because of the prior compacts. But this new series is what we're looking at.
If we were starting, if we were in the lacto flambo posture again, with no compacts, and we're negotiating compacts, I think it would be a hotly contested case. I think there's good arguments on both sides. It's a case that has never been litigated, as far as I know, where a state has changed its gaming policy after compacts have been in effect, prior to new ones being implemented.
Could I ask, Mr. Morgan and Mr. Baldwin set up an operation to play keno and roulette. Could they be prosecuted criminally?
If they're doing so in their basement?
Or commercial operation.
How about at the law school?
Yes, I believe they could be.
All right. Could they have been prosecuted criminally in the mid-80s?
Yes.
Have roulette and keno ever been lawful in Wisconsin in the last 25 years?
For commercial gambling operations? No, as far as I know, no.
And how can you say that roulette and keno are not criminal prohibitory?
As Judge Crabb's analysis indicates, and again, this was not the question before her. I think a court looking at this question about starting from scratch, what new games would be permitted, the question which I submit is not before the court in this case. I think a court would look not only to the language in the constitutional amendment, but the development of that amendment and the history behind the gaming compacts in Wisconsin, the prior tribal gaming that was approved under the compacts, the lacto flambo decision, and certainly if we don't have new compacts that we're negotiating in the context of the provisions in the original compact, which expressly provided that new games could be added and that subsequent changes in state law would not apply.
There's no subsequent changes in state law. This has been criminal prohibitory for as long as anyone can remember the gambling statutes in Chapter 945.
Right, but the fact that a state law criminalizes a specific gambling activity does not necessarily disqualify it from being allowed for tribes.
Why not?
Well, that's only if you assume that once you open the Class 3 gaming, anything goes. And you're not willing to say that. You're not willing to say, yeah, sports betting. That's another one. Or any game that you can think of that's in Class 3. If you're willing to say, yes, anything that falls under Class 3, the governor could negotiate. Because that's, once you open the door, that's it. But you're not willing to say that.
Whatever falls within the scope of permissible Class 3 games that Judge Crabb concluded in lacto flambo, I believe those games are permitted. The sports betting question threw me off a bit because I'm not sure that would fall within the scope of her definition. But other types of casino table games, for example, I think clearly would be within that.
Why are we bound by Judge Crabb's decision? The 1991 decision, Federal District Court, not reviewed, no cert accepted by the U.S. Supreme Court. Why are we bound by that? And there have been other districts and circuits that have taken other positions. Why are we bound?
Judge Crabb's decision ordered Governor Thompson to negotiate for Class 3 games. The effect of her decision, I believe, was to remove any doubt that the compacts were validly entered and complied with IGRA. In fact, she ordered us to negotiate those games.
Okay, so the 92 contracts are okay. All right. Where do we go from there? There's been a lot of activity. We've got a constitutional amendment. We have a change in the compacts in 98. We have a change in 2003.
why are we still looking at that?
Because those are still the compacts. Those compacts are still in effect, and those provisions the parties agreed to in 1992 remain in effect and govern the relationship between the state of Wisconsin and the Potawatomi tribe.
Because what, ERGA requires that?
Because as a matter of federal law, those compact terms govern the relationship between the two governments and govern Indian gaming in Wisconsin. And unless and until those compacts end, that law will continue to remain in effect. And Judge Crabb's decision, I believe, retains vitality.
So as a matter of federal law, those compacts, if they remain in effect, govern and they can't be changed or haven't been changed by the Constitution Amendment.
That's correct.
And there is no expansion that would implicate the state constitutional amendment?
If the expansion occurs according to the express terms that the parties agreed to in the original compact, then yes, they agreed that subsequent changes in state law would not restrict the parties' rights under the compact.
But isn't that a bit inconsistent with one of your earlier arguments? You started out as saying, hey, all we have here is the same kind of discretion that was exercised by Governor Thompson, duration, the same kind of selecting of games as in 1992, and now we're just talking about the same duties, except more expansively. Isn't there an inconsistency with that argument in your response to Justice Sykes?
I'm not seeing the inconsistency. What Governor Thompson did was he went to the bargaining table and he looked at the range of games that were permissible under IGRA that Judge Crabb had set forth. And the parties also expressly agreed that new games may be added in the future. Governor Doyle in 2003 sat at the bargaining table, looked at the games allowed under IGRA, and bargained over specific games and terms. I think what they did was exactly the same thing, the same exercise of authority under 14.035. They did exactly what the legislature told them to do, was to negotiate within the framework of IGRA and get the best deal you can for the state of Wisconsin.
Except when it comes to adding new games, isn't that circumscribed by IGRA itself, which references state law to determine the scope of allowable gambling? So to the extent that a revision of the old compact is going to expand gambling by adding new games, isn't that going to require an evaluation about whether those new games are compactable under IGRA, which necessarily involves the application of state law?
That's not petitioner's case, as I understand it, and they've repeated today.
I understand that, but that's my question, counsel, so if you would please answer it.
IGRA controls an existing, validly entered tribal gaming compacts supersede subsequently conflicting state law. And the parties knew that there could be future changes and future attacks. And if the question were to come up, what you're really saying is suppose there were an Artichoke Joe type action here. If petitioners had gone to federal court and sued the secretary and claimed these new games in the 2003 amendment are invalid, that's the case you're describing. And I think, for the reasons we've discussed, that it would be a seriously contested case, but there are strong arguments both ways. And I think that the fact that the state lottery clearly cannot offer roulette, nor can private commercial establishments offer roulette, under IGRA and under the law is not necessarily the end of the story in terms of the federal law implication.
So, counsel, The argument then is that the constitutional amendment in 93 had no impact. That's what your argument is. I mean, that's what your response, just so I understand that you're clear.
Yes, the 93 amendment did not affect the existing compacts and the gaming under those compacts or the subsequent renewals of those compacts.
So the state of Wisconsin is essentially frozen in time as to Indian gaming matters as of 1992 and can do nothing to affect the scope of gambling?
Which was 1 year before the constitutional amendment.
Correct.
Your answer to my question is yes, that we're frozen in time.
No, you posited earlier the hypothetical, what if we went back to a criminal prohibitory state of affairs? And I think, you know, things can change. Congress can change the federal law. The parties can agree to renegotiate compacts. And often, as time goes on, there are inevitably motivations for parties to a contract to renegotiate. So I don't think it's necessarily the case that we're frozen in time. The question is whether the legislature had to participate in the decision. And the answer, I think, is clearly no. If it did have to participate, then what is the operative state constitutional rule that says what Governor Thompson did in 98 and 92 was okay? He didn't go too far.
But, Counselor, that was never reviewed by any court, was it? We don't really have to say, oh, my goodness, we held what Thompson did constitutional, so now what Governor Doyle does is constitutional. Don't we have to look as a matter of first impression about whether the governor had this power that he exercised?
If Governor Thompson lacked the power to bind the state to the...
Has that ever been adjudicated? You're assuming he had the power. I don't think anybody's argued to us that whether he did or he didn't, right?
Petitioners have agreed that the prior amendments were valid.
Well, they can agree, but you all are before us, and now we're going to have to make a decision on what the law is. And agreements are helpful, but they don't really make a decision for us in the final instance. So I think your argument, I have trouble with it, because I think we have to look anew at what's occurred here. And I don't have any idea whether what Governor Thompson did was okay or not okay, and I don't believe anybody in any party has raised that. I think we have to focus on what was Governor Doyle's authority and did he operate lawfully within that authority, correct?
Correct. And what I'm getting at is I think what this court would have to do is fashion a brand new rule, not rooted in any constitutional jurisprudence, because we have no authority provided in this area. If the court is going to create a brand new constitutional separation of powers rule, we must have some reasonable specificity so that the governor and the legislature know what the boundary is between their powers.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a... Well, absolutely.
Let me ask it differently. As I hear your argument, the validity of the 2003 agreements depend on the fact that you have valid agreements in 92 and 98. This is a continuation, and under federal law, the compacts are good and can't be overturned by a state law because it's a federal rule of law. Is that essentially your argument?
Yes.
Okay. This court has explored with almost every lawyer who's come here since 9:45 this morning, the concept that maybe the 98 compacts were no good because they violated the 93 constitutional amendment. And maybe even the 92 compacts went out of existence with the constitutional amendment, but we can hold that. Nobody other than Dairyland in the first place, but not the legislative leadership here. Legislative leadership is not attacking the first two compacts. It's quite clear in their briefs. That's why you are relying on them and moving forward. If this court goes back and wants to attack those compacts, you think we should have briefs by Panzer and Guard in which they would either support or attack the compacts?
Yes, I think that would be very helpful.
And do you think they ought to brief the issue of whether anyone, the legislature or the governor, would have authority to enter into such compacts?
I think it certainly would help clarify their position, which I still have trouble determining what exactly their argument is. That is, whether these defects that they claim in the amendments are because they're outright prohibited by the Constitution. That is, no one can ever bind all subsequent legislatures, or only the governor can't do it without the legislature ratifying that. I think clarification would help.
Well, I'd like you to state again, if you would, why, if the 92 and 98 compacts are valid, and the 2003 compact is an amendment to those prior compacts, so you have a continuity of contracts, where the original contracts allow expansion of games if negotiated, right?
Correct.
And allow, I assume, changes in duration, because the 98 contract did change the duration from 7 to 5, right?
Actually, the 5 was already in the original compact in 92. Provided for the first opportunity to non-renew after 7 years within 5 year successive periods.
Okay. All right. Explain to me why, with that as a background, the state must continue its position of negotiating with the tribes for possible expansion of games. That is your position, right?
There is a difference between games that the state is required to negotiate and games the state is permitted. I think Mr. Morgan hinted at that earlier.
What are they required to negotiate?
They're required under IGRA to negotiate games permitted to any person for any purpose in the state. And the word permit has been the subject of litigation and judicial interpretation. And both Judge Crabb and the Ninth Circuit recently have concluded that the word permit does not mean expressly authorized a particular form of gaming, but it can also mean acquiescence or allowing gaming activity to go on. This is where the complexity comes in, because the question I think that would be for that a court in that situation would face is, what has Wisconsin acquiesced in light of the history of the compacts, the Lac du Flambeau decision, the constitutional amendment, the various pieces of legislation that the legislature has enacted? And even though we can all agree that the state lottery and private commercial operators may not be able to offer a particular game, that doesn't necessarily mean that a federal court would find that the state has not acquiesced in tribal gaming by Indian tribes.
Okay. Then what are our powers, though, to say what has been acquiesced in?
I don't believe that this court can rule on the IGRA question, which is what is permitted under Section 2710D of IGRA. That, I believe, is clearly a federal question.
Doesn't Section 14035 make it a state law question by virtue of that statute's incorporation of IGRA as apparently the only thing that cabins the governor's authority to negotiate?
I don't believe that a state could make an end run around Congress's exclusive remedial scheme in IGRA by trying to incorporate IGRA and then saying, well, now it's a state law question and we can look at all aspects of the compacts under IGRA. I don't know that that's been litigated. I submit that that would not be consistent with the exclusive provisions of IGRA.
Has anyone briefed that issue?
We have briefed the exclusivity of IGRA remedies, and I believe the tribe's amicus brief does as well.
Mr. Green, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Baldwin.
Just a few points. My learned colleague, Mr. Green, reads IGRA as supplying sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval, but its terms do not say so. And indeed, courts in other states have struck down gubernatorial authority to make compacts that almost inevitably complied with IGRA in that they did not favor any one tribe over another. They did not violate IGRA's explicit terms, nor did they violate any other part of state law. I refer to the New York Court of Appeals decision last June, Saratoga Chamber of Commerce against Pataki, which struck down on the grounds of lack of gubernatorial authority compacts
no
that were about 10 years old.
There was no section 14.035.
No, there was no section 14. There was an argument there of legislative acquiescence in that the legislature had appropriated money to supervise the gaming
activities.
But
there was no original 14.
No original jurisdiction.
And
that is,
all the cases that I read, none of them had a comparable 14.035 that attacked governor's powers.
14.03, right? That is correct, Your Honor. 14.035 is a blank check if the governor's position is upheld. It means that 14.035 means what it would mean if we had a preface. Notwithstanding any other state law, the governor can negotiate compacts. It doesn't say notwithstanding. It simply assumes, as I hope this court will read, that the governor will comply with state law, whatever that state law is. The petitioner's argument gives no limitation to the governor's power. And in that respect, when this court has viewed legislative grants of authority to other bodies, and I think particularly of Gilbert against the Medical Examining Board, it has said, yes, you can delegate broad authority as long as there are some kinds of, and this court has said, some kinds of procedural safeguards that will allow for some kind of review.
Professor Baldwin, I read those cases,
I'm
too.
I'm sure you...
And at least, as I remember them, they dealt either with administrative agencies,
is
which
true.
Is a special animal, not an elected official, or they did not reach the issue of governor's power. And there was one Wisconsin case that you relied on, but when I read that, they didn't reach that governor's issue. They went off on a different tack. So again, I found no authority where you have a delegation like this, and I don't even know if you should call it a delegation, if you have the powers in the governor that used the 1930s Pre-Lochner kind of doctrines to limit the governor.
Well, it was Schechter Corporation, of course, is the great last known delegation.
And that's not a very highly regarded opinion today, if I remember it correctly.
There's still
a... learn that from you.
I am not an infallible source of constitutional wisdom.
But this court is.
You are infallible because you are final.
That's
right. But the basic principle underlying 14035's construction has got to be the Constitution of Wisconsin. The governor has executive power. The legislature makes the big policy changes. And 14035, as the governor interprets it, allows him to make policy, basic, fundamental, changing policy decisions that should not be permitted under a constitutional system of representative government. I thank you.
Thank you.
Professor.
I'm sorry. Justice Prosser.
Petitioners concede in paragraph 41 of the stipulation of facts that six states have entered into tribal state gaming compacts of indefinite duration.
That's true.
So indefinite duration is not per se wrong. Did governors alone do it in any of the...
In our reading, those states which do allow these indefinite types of compacts, the legislature did have a role. And indeed, in I think some, the legislative role is a continuing kind of oversight. I think of the Kansas point. I don't believe that any other state has given the governor the kind of blanket authority that the governor claims in this case. In any event, it's the Wisconsin Constitution that we're dealing with.
Let me just ask you a question about duration while we're on that. One, there is within the compact a potential for a review every 5 years, is it, and then every 25 years.
That's correct.
And there's a good faith doctrine.
That's
of
correct.
Negotiation and an arbitration provision.
Only the arbitration provision, I think, applies mostly to the question of good faith, whether it's good faith. But good faith negotiations do not guarantee agreement. And the point we make is there is no possibility for termination or major changes without mutual consent.
What about the concept we find in other areas of last best offer, which is also incorporated there?
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds to me like there is possibility of change.
Well, there is. If there is an impasse and no compact is in effect, then the mediation last best offer provisions are triggered. But if the compact remains in effect under its terms, as Section 30 says, you do not have the situation that would trigger the arbitration or last best offer kind of mediation. In other words, mediation and arbitration provisions, both under the compacts and under IGRA, only apply if there is no existing compact. And the existing compacts that the governor negotiated can't be changed without mutual consent. And that is a problem that a broad construction of 14.035 presents.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes our argument 03-0910, Panzer versus Doyle.